Welcome to the OA Light a Candle Meeting podcast. Visit our website at www.oalaig.org, where you'll find several speaker feeds with over 400 speaker files, forms for ordering CDs for these speakers, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Hila.
Hi, my name is Hila. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm so grateful to be asked to speak at this meeting. And
Hi, guys.
And welcome to the newcomers, the returnees, out-of-towners. Congratulations to the chip takers. And I'm just going to say right off the bat, I'm super emotional. As soon as I saw my sponsor, who I haven't been able to speak to very often because she's going through her own challenges and... You know, she sent out this really beautiful email saying, please be patient with me because I need you guys as much as you need me. And I haven't for a second thought about finding someone else because she's so important to my recovery, as is everyone in this room. So the fact that I'm even feeling emotion and there's tears coming up is such a sign of my recovery because it was a good solid 10 years where I did not shed a tear. I was just so... shut down. I could not access my emotions. I was just numbed out with the food. And the minute that I put the food down, there was just anxiety and fear and chaos. And I couldn't live life without the food to numb me. But I'll try to share, as it was suggested in the format, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So I came into program in 2005, and I had various lengths of abstinence, and currently have 18 months of three meals and life in between. And it's been the most healing abstinence I've had, and I have a food plan today, and I wasn't willing to do that prior to these last 18 months. And just to get the qualifications out of the way, I do weigh myself now, but I didn't weigh myself when I came into program. That was part of my early what I did early on, just to gain some sanity because I was so obsessed with numbers. But I can tell you that I was barely squeezing into a size 14 pant. I fit into a really comfortable size 6. So there's physical recovery for those of you who've come in here for that. I definitely came for the vanity. So glad I stayed for the sanity because I really didn't want it. You know, they talk about how the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. I did not have any desire to stop eating compulsively. I had a desire to figure out the right food plan so I could, you know, have my cake and eat it too, literally. I didn't want the weight to show up on my body, but I wanted to be able to use food to cope, you know. Food was my drug, and after coming to these rooms, what I realized is dieting was my other drug. And that was the thing I had the hardest time putting down. Was dieting, and that's kind of the work that I've done with my current sponsor for the last 2 years, and it's brought me the ability to put down everything, all the disease ideas and behaviors and coping skills that I used, and really work a program. So that's kind of like qualifying where I came from, where you know the recovery is. But I'll start at the beginning and. You know, I think like a lot of us, there were always feelings. I always had feelings of not belonging and not fitting in, being different than. And food just numbed all those emotions. And I had a very active brain, and food slowed that down too, you know. I definitely think that I was born a compulsive overeater. I have a family that's full of compulsive overeaters. I have a mom who's still actively a compulsive overeater. And so I think I learned, you know, how to use food from her. And I think that I was born with a predisposition to find comfort and extra food, and it worked for a really long time until it didn't. But I was born in a different country, and I moved here at the age of five. At the age of seven, not speaking the language. Being the only girl in a family of two boys and myself. So even within my own family, I kind of felt like the outsider. My brothers didn't have any kind of weight problem. I was the fat kid, even though, you know, looking back, I know a lot of us can relate, like, I wasn't really that overweight, but I always felt really fat. So that's why, to me, like, this disease centers in my head first. It manifests in my body second. But my first memory of, like, being obsessed with food was I was 5 years old. I was visiting my grandmother. I remember we were all sitting in the living room. Everyone else seemed to be sort of engaging with one another, having conversations, enjoying themselves. And I sort of was in this bubble. And the only thing I could focus on was this bowl of pistachios that my grandmother always used to have out on the table. And it was just like that obsession of, I couldn't stop. I just wanted one after the next, and I was watching the, like, pile of, you know, the shells, thank you, the shells kind of piling up, and, like, consciously, I don't even know if at that point I knew to be ashamed of that, but then my grandmother made a comment, like, you should probably slow down on those, they're sort of fattening, which all of a sudden to me was like, oh, I must have a weight issue that's visible if she would make a comment like that. Looking back now, it could have been that my mom was overweight. Maybe my grandmother was obsessed with her own weight. I don't know. It doesn't really matter. But that was, you know, that was my first memory. That was also my first memory of being ashamed of the way that I ate and remembering how the effect of overeating. And that's pretty much how it was as long as food was, as long as I was in my disease. I was disconnected from you. I was disconnected from myself, and it was just me and the food, and I was miserable, and I felt guilty, and I felt ashamed, and I felt depressed. It was really bad. And so I moved to this country, didn't speak the language, felt really separate from, and, you know, my parents ended up getting divorced about 4 years after we moved, and food just, you know, it filled in the gaps. It helped me cope. I didn't have any other coping skills at the time, and I just, you know, I remember it got really bad. I mean, just like it talks about in the OA 12 and 12, you know, I ate until I was sick, until, you know, I would put on 40 pounds. My clothes didn't fit, like, from 6 months, you know, I would lose 40 pounds and then I'd be right back up the scale and, you know, terrified to see people because I was ashamed that I'd put on this much weight. You know, I've eaten burnt food off the floor. I've burned the top of my mouth because I couldn't wait till the food cooled down to eat it, like, out of the trash can, even poured stuff on it and still dug it out of the trash can. You know, just kind of demoralizing behavior around food. And it was always done in secrecy. I was very ashamed of the way that I ate. So if I was in front of you, it's like the model eater salad, you know, whatever it was, like, to look good. Oh, I'll just have an apple, you know. But I wasn't even present because all I could think about was, I can't wait to go home and, like, just, like, release the pressure. I can't wait to go home and just drown myself in food. And I think around the age of 13 is when I started becoming interested in boys. And then all of a sudden, like, the need to lose weight became paramount. And that's when the dieting kicked in. And you know, I tried about every weight loss plan out there. I've done all the commercial diets more than once. You know, I've got all the Weight Watchers materials. I think every time they switched the plan, I got, like, the materials. And, you know, I could never stick with it, but I always kept all the materials because, you know, one day maybe I'll get back to it and look at it and utilize it and, you know, bless you. You know, all the commercial diets, all the, like, diets out of the magazines. I've done the shakes, you know, two shakes and a sensible meal. The third meal was never sensible because I was just like starving by the time dinner came around, you know, and the rationalizing of like, well, I've only had two drinks, you know. It was just, the truth is, at my first meeting, I remember like reading step one and being like, I'm not powerless. Like, I've lost weight a million times. And the truth is, I didn't really lose any substantial weight on my own until I discovered diet drugs. That was the truth. But I was so out of touch with reality when I came into the rooms that I hadn't remembered that fact. It wasn't until I started doing my step work and really, like, peeling back the layers that I remembered, oh, yeah, the first time was Fen-Phen, and the second time was the stuff called Hydroxycut, which is now, by the way, no longer on the market. It's illegal now because people were dying from that. And I was abusing it a lot. So I've done, you know, literally everything you can imagine to try to lose weight. You know, and I thought the first time I lost some weight and I started getting attention, that I was hooked. Like, that was my drug. And I was like a heroin addict who was chasing that first high. But the reality is, each time I lost and gained weight, I destroyed my metabolism a little bit more. I wore down my resilience. Any sort of self-will that I had, was worn down. And, you know, after a while, diets just stopped working. I just didn't have the will. And it was demoralizing. Every time I lost the weight, I always swore I'd never gain it back. And then I was powerless, you know. I was powerless. I didn't have tools for living. And eventually I would start eating again. And, you know, what I've discovered, too, is, like, the more that I restrict, bless you, the more I restrict, the more I'm going to binge. Like, the pendulum is going to swing in the other direction sooner or later. And what I've learned in program is moderation, you know, just moderation. And so I've been on the anorexic side as well. I've been an exercise bulimic. I come by this disease very honestly, and I've had it in all the different forms. But I remember thinking that I always thought that just being fat was my problem. Like, that was why I was miserable and depressed. And if I could just lose the weight, like, life would magically begin. And so I decided, like, dieting was going to be the answer. And when I couldn't, that didn't bring me happiness and I couldn't maintain the weight loss, then I thought, oh, I know what the problem is. I need to exercise. So if I just diet and exercise, that would be the magic formula. And as a result, I became a compulsive exerciser, you know, a bulimic exerciser. And when that didn't fix me, I realized, oh, I know what I'm missing, the trifecta. I need diet, exercise, and therapy, because I was going to figure this out with a therapist. And, you know, I do everything 100%. Like, when I decide to do something, like, I go for it all the way. So, you know, it wasn't enough to just exercise. Like, I needed to have every piece of equipment that was ever advertised on, like, late-night television. I owned, like, every, you know, every video, every, like, you know, exercise tape that came out. Like, I was on it. I mean, I had a huge collection of VHS tapes, you know, back in the day. And I had, you know, a Reebok Step, and I had the slide. I don't know if you guys remember the slide. You put on these, like, socks, and it was a slippery thing, and you're, like, insane. I had that. I remember at one point I bought, like, a industrial strength, like, stair stepper. Getting that thing into my apartment was a joy. I think I used it, like, 5 times, you know. You know, and the same thing with therapists. Like, the newest book would come out about how to lose weight, and I would seek out the person writing the book, because I was going to go right to the source. I wanted the expert. They were going to figure it out. They were going to fix me. And, you know, somewhere along the way, this little seed got planted of, like, oh, you know, I haven't tried the spiritual route, but I was so anti-religion, and the word God used to make my skin crawl, that just, my mind shut down to that immediately. But a seed was planted somewhere along the way. I don't know, probably my higher power if I look at it now, but I wasn't ready for that. And so, sorry, I'm just going to have a little water. I went along and lost and gained 40 to 50 pounds over and over again, each time becoming more and more demoralized, battle weary, as they talk about in the big book. And, you know, at this point, my life had become incredibly small, and my only purpose was to lose weight, and everything was put on hold. And the more that I held on tightly to try to lose this weight, the more things I squeezed out of my life. And, you know, somebody once said to me, "What? I can't hear you. I'm too busy being thin." Like, that was me. I was so busy getting and staying thin, I literally had no room in my life for anything else. And I was spiritually, mentally, emotionally bankrupt. I suffered from depression. I never wanted to leave the house. I didn't date. I didn't make plans on the weekends. My idea of an amazing time was, you know, I just remember, like, the pressure getting so tight at the end of Friday that all I would think about is, how am I going to get to the store and get enough food to last me throughout the weekend, because I wasn't going to be leaving the house. And I would just, you know, lock myself in the house, watch TV, draw the drapes, disconnect the phone, just like it talks about. I remember the first time I read that passage in the 12 and 12, and I was like, holy crap, somebody, like, I really felt like I'd been exposed in such a, you know, a huge way, because that was exactly me. I heard somebody refer to it once as the, like, Bermuda Triangle, right? The television, the couch, and the refrigerator, right? Like, that was a well-worn path in my house, you know? And, you know, I remember thinking at one point that if I just had, like, a nutritionist and a personal trainer and a chef, kind of like somebody else we know that didn't work for long term. But, you know, I remember when this you know, TV personality had all that and was, you know, had lost weight, and I was like, well, if I had that, I could do it. Well, be careful what you wish for, because I got selected to be in a People magazine article, and I got the trainer and I got the nutritionist, and I didn't really have the chef, but we did have a chef that, like, gave us some lessons on how to, like, cook healthy gourmet meals. But, you know, I had the trainer that I trained with 5 days a week, and then on the weekend I would do these boot camps. And I have lots of injuries to prove it. And I had the nutritionist that I went to every week, and he would do a blood test to see if, like, you know, my numbers were changing, and he would weigh me, and he gave me all these, like, supplements. I didn't pay for anything. I really thought that, like, my prayers were answered. Well, guess what? Couldn't stick to the food plan, but I was lying about it, and so I didn't lose as much weight as I really wanted to. And, you know, as I had mentioned, like, with each weight loss and weight gain, like, my body stopped responding. So even though I worked out really hard, and even though I tried to stick to a food plan, like, when the time came for us to do the pictures, I was so disappointed. And I had planned a trip with some girlfriends who were normies and had very slender, beautiful bodies. I planned a trip to Cabo with them, which I thought would be a fantastic idea, because, right, I was going to emerge thin and, like, be confident and comfortable in my body, because really the only problem was I was overweight. And I went on this trip, and I was miserable. And at the time, there was no transportation. Like, all the cabs and all the shuttles, all public transportation and, like, private transportation, they were all striking. And so you, like, could, unless you had, like, pre-booked shuttle or a cab to the airport, like, they weren't even allowed to come pick you up. Like, you were SOL. So my friends left a day before me, and I could not wait for them to leave, because it was on. I was going to, like, binge my brains out. And I went to the little convenience store. Like, this place we stayed at didn't have any phones or television, so it was just me and the food. Like, there was nothing else to distract me. And I went and I spent everything that was more expensive, because it was this little convenience store in this resort that was, like, remote. And, you know, so everything was, like, triple the price. I did not care. And I just proceeded to just lock myself in this hotel room and just binge and binge and binge and feel really sick and, you know, and then eat some more because I am, like, in the height of my disease, I am just a volume eater, you know, just like I want to eat till I pass out. And oddly enough, as I was stuffing my face, I was also reading a magazine by said TV host, and there was, she was like kind of my mentor without knowing it, reading a letter to the editor, and it was about a woman whose friend was anorexic or bulimic or both, and she wanted to know what she could do to help her. They gave her some suggestions, like, here are all these organizations that help deal with eating disorders, and one of them was one in California, and I went to the little computer at the front desk that was kind of like their internet cafe, and I looked up this number. I just knew that I needed help and that I couldn't do this anymore. I could not go on living because that last, you know, nutrition, that was like my last hope. Like, I thought that was going to fix me, and it didn't. So I wrote down the number for this, it was the Eating Disorder Center of California, and I knew that I was going to call as soon as I got home, and I was probably going to, I wanted to check in. I wanted to be in an inpatient because I knew I couldn't do it alone, and I just couldn't do it anymore. And I proceeded to just binge till I passed out, and I woke up the next morning and I packed up my things and I was waiting for the shuttle and I was waiting for the shuttle and I was waiting for the shuttle and I called the front desk, and you know, I was in fine form because I was just hated myself because I just binged, and bless you, and I yelled at the person at the front desk, where's my shuttle? And I called the shuttle company, and they finally arranged for someone to come pick me up. I get to the airport. I go to the ticket counter. I give them my ticket, and the lady looks at me really confused, and she's typing and typing, and she's looking at me and typing, and I'm like, what's going on? Of course, I'm impatient, angry, and just annoyed with everyone, right, because I'm just coming off my high, basically. And she says, I'm so sorry. Like, your flight was yesterday. And I was like, what? And she's like, yeah, like, your flight was yesterday, and you know, that's me and my disease. Like, checked out, unaware, like, clueless and disconnected and detached. And I just think, like, thank God, like, somebody came and picked me up and took me to the airport. I don't know what I would have done. So I had to buy another ticket. I had to sit at the airport and wait for, like, 4 hours. And I was miserable, as you all know what it's like the day after a binge. I was bloated and uncomfortable, and like there were kids running around the terminal, and they were annoying the crap out of me. And I finally made it home, and I proceeded to lock myself up in my apartment for a month and put on 30 pounds. And that's where dieting takes me. Like, extreme restriction and dieting and exercise is what I did before I went to Mexico. When I came back, like, the pendulum swung in the other direction, and I just went crazy. And, you know, like I mentioned, I always ate in secrecy. Like, by the end of that 30 days, I didn't even care. Like, I barely left my house, but I had neighbors upstairs who were also addicts, and they used to keep a huge bowl of candy, and I was just, like, going up there every hour, like, getting my fix. Like, I didn't care. I, you know, to put on 30 pounds in a month, like, it's noticeable. I was bloated all the time, and I didn't care. I was going up there, and it's like that was kind of like my bottom. I didn't care if anyone knew, you know, because it was always about keeping up appearances for me. So I called that number at the end of 30 days, and I will mention, too, that one of the girls that went with me to Mexico had gotten sober in AA 16 years prior, and she was my Eskimo, and she kind of saw me, like, go downhill in a very short amount of time. She said, you know, there's this program called OA, and AA helped me, and perhaps maybe OA will help you. And I'd been at an OA meeting when I was 16, and, you know, at the time I wasn't even close to being ready. I was not done dieting and trying to control and manipulate this, you know, disease. So I'd known about OA, but it was never something that I thought I was going to go to. And then I called the Eating Disorder Center, and I said, I want to know if I'm sick enough to get checked in to in-person inpatient treatment. And the woman said, I have this guy. He used to be the director. He's now a therapist. Go see him. He'll do an evaluation, and he'll determine if you're qualified for inpatient. And I said, okay. So I went to see him, and I'd already found an OA meeting. I went to see him on a Wednesday, and I was going to go to my first OA meeting on that Monday. And when I got in to see him, it turned out that he had been in OA for over 30 years and also recommended that I go to that meeting. And I just feel like that's kind of the way in recovery that it's been for me, is like the universe is constantly sending me signs, like synchronicity. When I hear a message over and over again, like today, I know to pay attention to that. And so he said, you know, I don't think you need inpatient, but I think that you need OA. And so I said, all right, I was willing to go to my first meeting, and I did. And even though I didn't want to be there, and I didn't want to be one of you, because, you know, you represented me and you were a mirror for me, and I hated myself so much when I came into this program. I knew I needed to be there. I couldn't deny that I had an eating disorder and that I was out of ideas. And, you know, by the time I stepped in my first meeting, I really wanted to die, because my whole existence, like, was hanging in the balance of, like, when I lost weight, then I could. Then life would begin. Then I would date. Then I would get the job. Then I would travel. Then I would, you know, just fill in the blank. Then I would, like, find myself and discover what it is that I like to do. And I would be deserving of being happy and, you know, all those things that I, like, put off for so many years. And so when I knew I couldn't lose weight anymore, like, I really did want to cease living. I was severely depressed and suicidal. I never really attempted suicide, but I was constantly having, like, dreams about it. It was not normal, and it scared me. But the thing is, back then, when I first stepped into the rooms, I didn't realize that dieting was part of my problem, too. Like, that is part of my disease. And it was really hard for me to decipher, because there, you know, for some of us, like, we need the strict food plan. And for me, that was part of my disease, not part of my recovery. And it was really hard for me to, like, not be focused on wanting to control, because it was very attractive to me. And so when I first came into the rooms, I found the most strict sponsor who was going to, like, be sort of my Nazi, like, drill sergeant, which is what I did for myself all these years, and I knew I couldn't do it for myself, and so I just found the person who would do it for me. Of course, I ended up resenting her, and I think we lasted, like, a week, and, you know, that didn't work out so well, but, you know, I never left, and I've had varying lengths of abstinence, but I never left, no matter what, and, you know, what I can tell you about my experience of the last 10 years is that I had to find my path. You know, that meant a lot of experimenting with different food plans and giving up certain foods and then not giving up foods and finding certain sponsors and then, you know, looking for a more loving sponsor, going to different meetings, you know. You know, I told you, like, the word God really, 10 minutes? Thank you. The word God really, I say I was kind of, like, straddling the fence when I came in between atheist and agnostic. But I started praying. I started meditating. I found a power that I could call my higher power. And, you know, early on, I remember my sponsor saying, if the word God bothers you, scratch it out and put in HP. And then I was like, oh, how about HS, higher self? And I was like, oh, I like that, because those are my initials. I can really get behind that. Yeah, that'll work, you know. Like, whatever it was, I was willing to try it, you know. And that was all it took, was, like, a willingness to do something different. And, you know, I started working the steps. I've never left. At my very first meeting, someone came and spoke to me after the meeting, and they gave me some really sage advice, which I still try to pass on to anyone who listens, and I still use to this day. And they said, take a service position, get a sponsor, and share at meetings. Like, that was, like, the beginning. And I got a service position at that very first meeting. And I have to say, in the last 10 years, I've always had a service position at least at one meeting. It keeps me accountable. It gets me to meetings. It gives me a sense of purpose and usefulness. And that's what I was missing when I was in my disease. You know, I just felt like such a failure. I didn't know that, like, I was trying to beat this disease on my own, and I couldn't, you know. I continue to work the steps, and I've always had a sponsor in this program. You know, early on, I was willing to go to any lengths, and so I did a 90-90 early in my recovery, and I remember that just catapulting me into a place of peace that I hadn't felt before. Like, I needed to quiet my mind, and then as I started to get some recovery, and, you know, for me, like, this last abstinence that where I'm eating three meals, and I commit my food ahead of time, not always at this point, but early on, probably for the first 12 or 13 months, I committed every meal, and, you know, I didn't do it perfectly at the beginning. My story is that it evolved over time when I stopped trying to make it perfect and just trusted that if I continue to take the steps, follow direction, go to meetings, use the tools of this program, that it would evolve. And it started with, like, maybe leaving, like, one bite for God, which wasn't always easy for me because I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm like, if it's on my plate, I want to finish it. I'm not done till the plate's done. And that's why, for me, like, I needed to commit my food and have moderation in my meals, because, like, whatever was on my plate, I was going to eat. Like, I have an eating disorder. Like, for me, it's not about a certain food that triggers my disease. Like, the minute I take that first bite, I am in danger of not stopping. And it can be anything for me. So I have to practice moderation, and I have to have accountability with my food. And when I was willing to do that, and as I said, for a long time I wasn't, because I felt like a diet. But when I was willing to do that, everything changed for me. And I found a sponsor that has what I want. She eats all foods in moderation. She is free of compulsive overeating. And, you know, I had to let go of, like, cutting out certain foods or banning certain foods. And, you know, the interesting thing is, if I look at the way that I eat today, it's kind of the way I always wanted to eat, but I couldn't do it on my own. And the only difference, like, from the outside, somebody looking in would look like, oh, you look like you're on a diet, which I really don't think I do look like I'm on a diet. But the way that I eat today is the way that I try to eat on my own prior to program and my recovery. And the only difference between what's happening behind the scenes is that today I make food choices from a place of self-love and wanting to take care of myself and wanting to be present and feel good in my body and show up for the life that I have today because of this program. And the way that it looked before and what was behind the scenes before was self-hatred and, like, I hate myself so much and I'm so disgusting that I have to lose this weight in order to be lovable and worthy of a life. So from the outside, it might look the same, but this is an inside-out job. And for me, like, it had to start with the inside. And I'm really clear today that had I come in, gotten the right food plan, and somehow miraculously been able to, like, maintain a diet, I would have left a long time ago. And I'd have probably been back with 30 more pounds. Or maybe I wouldn't have come back. Maybe I would have attempted suicide. I don't know. I'm glad I never tried to find out. You know, and a little bit about what it's like today. Like, part of what happened as a result of my disease is that I stopped being able to show up for anything. And so that included my job. And so I decided I was going to become self-employed, which really meant I could binge whenever I wanted and I didn't have to get dressed in the morning and show up to go anywhere. And so even though I thought I had discovered, like, the perfect, like, way to manage it, it wasn't great. And I did manage to, you know, support myself for all these years, but I knew that working from home wasn't working for me. And it took me 3 years of working steps and praying and meditating and asking for support to be willing to, like, step outside of my house and get a job. And, you know, my head told me all kinds of lies, as it does with most anything that I'm afraid of. Like, my disease will jump in there and just, like, tell me, not, you know, it's like the boogeyman. It told me, you don't have any real bankable skills. You don't know how to be around people. How are you possibly going to drive to work every day? What are you going to do with your dog? She's been with you since she was 8 weeks old. How are you ever going to, like, afford daycare for her? I mean, I had so many reasons not to go out and find a job, except that I knew when I got abstinent this last time, like, everything came into shape. Like, when the disease was quieted, the healing began. And today I have a job making more money than I could ever imagine. I love what I do so much. Like, it is a joy for me to go to work. Like, that is so contrary to what I believed before I left the house to pursue even finding a job. And all these things I did with the support of my sponsor, my fellows, my higher power, I didn't do any of this stuff alone, you know. I just was willing to, like, admit I'm terrified and I need help, and could you walk me through this? Could you be with me while I do this? A ton of book ending, you know, like I said, I commit my food ahead of time. It just keeps me accountable, and it just leaves a lot of room for life. I sponsor four amazing women today. Sponsoring used to be such a chore for me because I thought that I was responsible for your recovery because I'm a self-centered addict, right? And it's all about me, and I have this power, right? And today I realized, like, we all walk our own path and we all find recovery and a higher power in our own time. And all I have to do is share with you what worked for me. And you can either do it or not. And whether you do or not, it's okay with me. And, you know, it took me 8 years to be willing to have a food plan, to commit my meals. And today that feels like such a loving thing. It doesn't feel like a restrictive thing. It doesn't feel like a punishing thing. You know, so I have this job that I love. I have a social life. I'm dating. I love myself today, and I can say that without any reservation, and it chokes me up. Because I didn't think that was possible unless I was, like, you know, anorexic. The other thing I realized is that I'll never be thin enough. My body will never be good enough. And so I stopped trying to make that some attainable goal for me. Today I want to be healthy, and I want to be abstinent. I want to be clear-minded. I want to have freedom from the obsession, which, you know what, 99.9% of the time I am. I do not think about food between meals. You know, when I think about food, when my stomach's like, it's time to eat, I'm hungry, or, like, I get a little bit, you know, like, faint, which doesn't happen very often, but, you know, like, whatever physical signs come up, I'm like, oh, that's when food enters my mind. Like, as normal as I'm ever going to be around food, you know. But like I said, when I take that first bite, if I haven't anchored myself by making a commitment or knowing ahead of time and making the commitment to myself of, like, this is what I'm having, I'm in danger. I am. I'm like, one of the things that I realized in this new abstinence is that if I don't, like, put my food on a plate and sit down before I take my first bite, I've poked that sleeping bear. Like, I have triggered my disease, whether I know it or not. If I'm, like, preparing my meal and I'm taking that first impulsive bite, if I have impulsivity in my meal, like, it's like Russian roulette. I'm rolling the dice. I might not be able to stop, you know, and I'm being told I need to wrap up. So I'll just end with this. I've learned a whole lot in this program. I don't ever plan on leaving. And today I have loving thoughts, and I love myself, and I have a life that I really want to show up for, and I'm really, really grateful to the program. So thank you for letting me share.